The last case on the court's calendar this morning is State of Minnesota versus Path. We're ready for arguments. Please introduce yourself for the record before beginning each leg of your argument so we have identification for the audio recording of the hearing.
Well, good morning. My name is Paul Eng. I represent Christopher Path. He appeals his conviction for criminal sexual conduct in the first degree. He's serving a 144-month sentence in Moose Lake presently. This interesting case involves the heart of what a criminal trial is supposed to be and what a due process right a defendant has. And that right is to present testimony to contest the state's evidence that they find consequential, witness by witness, fact by fact. And in this case, they accused Ramsey County accused Mr. Path of two rapes. The second one was recanted, and the alleged victim accused his sister of doing the same thing. And the court barred the sister from ever testifying that she did no such thing, and we were prevented from generating a reasonable doubt as to both rapes. The facts provide a context which is somewhat disturbing here. Any time a recantation or a false accusation is made on a rape case, it's disturbing. But the victim here was having trouble in school. She was getting tutored from her aunt. The aunt asked her if she had been abused. She said she had. She went to her father, and then the father went to the school. And then they went to MCRC. And the tape is 15 minutes long. If you're interested, I encourage you to watch it. And at the tape, which is a neutral site with a neutral evaluator, this young woman was asked to tell the truth, warned that not telling the truth is a problem because other people get accused who aren't guilty. And she asked her what happened, and there were two incidences. One was at a Hoyt Avenue address, and one was in Wisconsin.
And counsel, I'm going to interrupt you for a question, because sure. I think we're all familiar with the facts. As I read the record, it's my impression that the district court reasoned that you could not present the testimony you wanted to because it addressed a collateral matter. In other words, the Wisconsin incident wasn't on trial. We don't need to get into what happened in the Wisconsin incident. It's irrelevant. It could confuse the jury. It could take unnecessary time. Was that the district court's thinking?
That was the district court's thinking, but it was hardly collateral because both instances were joined. I mean, she was interviewed as to both. And as a practical matter, had she said that the digital penetration took place in Afton State Park, Mr. Path would have been charged with that. So it was clearly relevant. It was charged in the probable cause section.
Here's my question about sure. collateral, and it's a question that the state will need to address as well. Although the district court said, we're not going to get into what happened in Wisconsin, it comes in only for impeachment. She said it was Mr. Path, and now she says it's his sister. You get to impeach her, show she's not credible. Although that was the reasoning, as I understand it, prior to the district court making the ruling, the state had presented testimony from the complaining witness that went into, in detail, what happened in Wisconsin, why were they there, who went there, who was in the tent, who was sleeping where in the tent, who abused her, described the abuse. It was the sister. How do you know? There's all this testimony about what happened in Wisconsin presented by the state through the complaining witness. At that point, had the district court made a ruling about whether or not information about Wisconsin was collateral?
He was. He announced he was going to wait to hear her testimony. Okay. So he deferred ruling, but at that point they opened the veritable door.
Okay. So at that point, there's no objection from the defense, but at that point the court hasn't said, you're not going to be able to respond to any of this.
Right. Right. And that his ruling comes a little later, but they did open the door. They introduced all this evidence. And then after she testifies, and by the way, we tried to cross-examine her. Mr. Friedberg did, who's one of the best cross-examiners around, if I don't say so myself, but he tried to cross-examine her. And the 70 pages has, and I counted it yesterday, 50 times when she said, I don't remember, I don't recall. Did you or did you not accuse Mr. Path of abusing you in Wisconsin? I don't remember that. Is this what you said?
Back to the evidentiary issue here, yeah, and the alleged due process violation. What is it that you weren't allowed to do? You weren't allowed to ask the sister, you heard these accusations, are they true or not?
Right. Well, we weren't.
How and why would that have made a difference in the trial?
Well, first of all, she was a credible witness. The offer of proof is very detailed. Number two, you know, we did put the sister on to say what happened at the White Avenue address, but then there's this gigantic gap for the jury. I mean, she's testifying, and then I can't ask her any questions.
The jury then hears the MCRC or watches the MCRC
right.
video and hears the nurse testify, oh, yeah, she told me it was Mr. Path who did both these things.
Right.
I mean, why isn't that sufficient presentation of evidence for you to have presented that she's not a credible witness, that the complaining witness is not credible?
Because, the cases talk about false accusations being almost in a different category. I mean,
substantive evidence,
right,
not just impeachment.
You know, to win the case, and which is what we were trying to do, of course, is that the lawyers want to present testimony that's in contradiction. The cross was inefficient and ineffectual. That's the problem we had, is that she didn't answer questions very well. And if you look at the cases, the Amos and Martin and Moa, they hold that, well, you know, we can't have witnesses like this who don't answer questions and then claim that the extrinsic evidence is barred, because they're not really engaging in the process of law. It was really quite
And your
troubling.
Position is that the recording and the testimony of the nurse was not extrinsic evidence.
No, it was offered under the hearsay exception 8043. I mean, that's why they put it in. I mean, the other problem with the case is they've offered in their direct testimony false testimony. I mean, they conceded, the government, the state has conceded, that the MCRC tape was false and that the accusation against him was false. And so the idea that they can make a correction through the alleged victim and we can't correct the correction or we can't ever address the correction through live testimony is really troubling. I mean, the state never interviewed her. They never looked at anything in Wisconsin. They never interviewed the people there. They never talked to Tippany, who had no record whatsoever, waived her Fifth Amendment right, was willing to testify. I mean, the danger is, the prejudice is that the jury could assume this is a family of child abusers, because we weren't allowed to rebut the notion that Tippany had done it. And then what's really galling about the case is the government argued at the end that Tippany must have done it because the child's believable as what she said with Tippany, knowing full well that they made every effort whatsoever to bar Tippany's testimony.
Was an objection made to that?
Yeah, I did make an objection. I moved for mistrial, and the judge let it go. In terms of relevance here, Mindy Mitnick is their expert. She testified about the characteristics of sex abuse victims. She's very powerful. She gets hired all the time for a good reason. And she was cross-examined, and she said, well, some recantations are false, some recantations are true. And then she admitted this. This is her testimony. Now, suppose you then found out, as opposed to denying the second one took place, she accused another person. Would that play into your evaluation of the case? Yes. Wouldn't you want to know whether or not that was true or false? Yes. And if it were true, you would factor it in one way, and if it were false, you would factor it in another way. Would you not? Yes. So they present evidence that it's relevant. And then they say it's not relevant. And then she says at page 631, I don't want to be pedantic here, but it's almost too good. The record's almost too good for us. Certainly you would want to factor in an understanding of the reasons for the recantation to see if you can reach a conclusion about whether it's a false recantation or a recantation because the abuse didn't occur. We sought to show that the abuse didn't occur. That's the defense. He didn't do it, she didn't do it, the family didn't do it. And I think the error of which was rooted in a sort of a narrow interpretation of Rule 613. It says, yeah, if you can cross-examine the witness, extrinsic evidence isn't permitted, but there is that clause in B that says in the interest of justice, something like that. But
how
the case law,
does the state presenting testimony from the complaining witness describing in detail what happened to her in Wisconsin and who did it align with the judge's ultimate ruling that what happened in Wisconsin's irrelevant, we're not going to allow the defense to go into that. You can't put the person who's just been accused in court on the stand to say, I didn't do this.
Well, I can't justify his ruling. Maybe I missed your question. No, I mean, it was an unjustifiable ruling.
No, it was a softball. And I'm looking at the closing argument from the state. Think about it. The aunt was someone that the complaining witness looked up to. They were close. You heard the same from the aunt. They watched countless videos together on makeup tutorials. The aunt taught the complaining witness how to do her makeup. They were close cousins. There wasn't a huge difference in age between them. Why would the complaining witness make up this allegation about her aunt if it wasn't true? That looks like a substantive argument that the complaining witness should be believed because she was credible when she accused her aunt. That
correct.
Doesn't sound
correct.
Like impeachment.
Yeah,
it
then,
sounds like buttressing the credibility of the complaining witness.
Right, and then we move for a mistrial.
Denied.
And the judge, of course, and then the judge said, well, it's really all about impeachment. And we said, no, it's not. She's arguing the credibility of a witness who we weren't permitted to call.
Well, you were permitted to call. You were
permitted to call
to discuss what happened in Wisconsin with this witness, even
right.
though the state had discussed what happened in Wisconsin with the complaining witness at length,
right.
and later argued it in their closing argument.
Right. And nor were we permitted to call Mr. Pass's wife, who was in the same tent, who was up all night, who said nothing happened, and who saw the child, the young woman, the next day and said she was just fine. There was no indicia of rape or trauma, which is always relevant evidence. You know, what is the reaction of the victim? Is she traumatized? Is she okay? It's always relevant to determine whether or not the accusation is true or not. People have reactions to be traumatized, and she was just fine. We couldn't get that evidence in even either. So this was enormously frustrating. And now he sits for 12 years for a guy that had no criminal history whatsoever. The cases speak with special care about false accusations because they strike at the heart of our system. A false accusation undercuts the believability in a just result and forces people to defend things they shouldn't have to defend. And when a false accusation is made, whether it's in the Goldenstein case or wherever it's made, special care has to be given to the defendant to try to rebut it. And this was an undeniable falsity here because they admitted it was false. So we don't have any steps to take of making discernible falsity. They admitted it was false, and then he put it in anyway. We request a new trial.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Assistant Ramsey County Attorney Peter Marker, representing the state of Minnesota respondent in this matter. Your Honors, this is a case about an inconsistent statement. about a case, about an incident that was not charged.
Now, if it was not charged and the judge said it was immaterial, why did the state elicit from the complaining witness a full description of what happened in Wisconsin? Planning the trip, getting to the trip, who slept where, who did what, the abuse, is she sure it was her, the aunt? Why did the state present that testimony?
Your Honor, the state presented that testimony to show that it was inconsistent with her MCRC video and to attack her credibility on that point, prophylactically. And Judge Guthman recognized
that. How are you attacking her credibility by providing all of that detail and then arguing in closing argument, she was credible, why would she have made this up? It doesn't seem like you were attacking her credibility.
Your Honor, the only reason to put that testimony in from the alleged victim in this case about the Wisconsin Dells incident was to contrast it with her MCRC video in which she named appellant as the perpetrator in that incident.
Why couldn't the state simply say, you gave a recorded interview, in that interview, isn't it true that you said it was Christopher Path who did this and not your aunt? That's impeachment. But that's not what the state did.
Well, I don't think the testimony was extensive, but it drew a clear contrast between what she was testifying to and what she said in the MCRC video.
Well, you had 10 pages of testimony from her regarding what happened in Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, I guess my point is the same.
I understand. I'm just having a hard time accepting that the state putting in detailed testimony regarding an offense that wasn't charged and which the judge later said was collateral and could not be addressed by the defense was just an attempt to impeach her. It didn't seem to be impeaching, especially when considered in the context of the state's closing argument, where the state expressly said she's credible.
Well, the state's defending its victim in that argument. The state's allowed to do that. I understand the court's concern with regard to
that. And that's it. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with you defending your victim. What I'm concerned about here is fairness. We say you're not entitled to a perfect trial, but you're entitled to a fair trial.
Certainly.
So at the point when the state presents this substantive evidence regarding what has happened in Wisconsin, there's no objection because there's been no ruling that the defense is not going to be able to counter that. And then when the state puts on the witness who could counter it, the district court rules, nope, that's all collateral, you can't go into that.
Your Honor.
That's what concerns me.
I understand. My memory of the record, and I will be corrected on this if it's incorrect, is that the question of TP's testimony, reference TP,
beyond,
was discussed throughout the trial, pre-trial, mid-trial, and throughout the trial. So this was not, I mean, this was something that was on the table the entire time.
Understood.
Okay, so the state presented that testimony again to impeach their witness. State's allowed to do that. Anyone's allowed to impeach their own witness. And so that was done prophylactically because the state knew that the defense would have the opportunity and would take the opportunity to confront her with that MCRC video. Now, I think what Judge Guthman was doing here, and he gave a lot of thought to this, was saying, look, what happened in Wisconsin is collateral. The inconsistent statement is not collateral. The inconsistent statement is where you make your case, because now you can attack her credibility universally. You can say, not only is she lying with regard to one of these statements, at least one of them, we don't know which one, but you can't believe her with regard to any statement now. And so that is exactly what he was entitled to. That's what the defendants in Goldenstein did not get.
That's what they didn't get. How about the Wenthe case? Are you familiar with Wenthe?
I am familiar with Wenthe, yes.
This looks a lot like Wenthe to me.
In what way, Your Honor?
In that there was an issue about whether or not the defense would be able to go into the complaining witnesses' prior sexual history.
Right.
In light of the rape shield law, there was a decision, or the state represented to the court at the start of the trial, we're not going to go into her past sexual history. We're simply, we're going to admit it for one reason. We're only going to talk about her victimization as a child of sexual abuse.
Right.
But then during the testimony, the state elicits from the complaining victim that she's a virgin and she's inexperienced, on and on and on.
Yep.
And then the defense says, well, wait a minute, now we need to present our evidence. This court said, state opened the door by going beyond what it said it was going to do and by presenting this substantive evidence regarding the victim's sexual history, the defense gets to respond to it.
Yes.
Now, the Supreme Court reversed. It didn't say it was improper to think that the state had opened the door and described the concept of opening the door as one of fairness and common sense, which prevents one party from gaining an unfair advantage over the other party, and therefore allows the opponent a right to respond with material that would otherwise have been admissible.
Yeah.
Supreme Court reversing didn't say, well, that's not a valid theory.
Right.
The Supreme Court in that case said, well, you know what? We're dealing with the rape shield law. The evidence you want to present is really not going to establish anything that's all that probative.
Right.
So we're saying it was okay to leave it out.
Yeah.
But here, the state presented testimony from the complaining witness saying, TP sexually abused me in Wisconsin. Here are all the details. And then TP comes to the stand and testify, and she's not allowed to talk about Wisconsin at all.
Yeah.
Which potentially leaves the jury with the impression that, well, she's not talking about it because she's guilty or she's got a Fifth Amendment right. It sort of all leads to this conclusion that the complaining witness is telling the truth about what happened in Wisconsin, so she's telling the truth about Mr. Path. And that seems a little unfair to me.
I understand what you're saying.
Especially when the state, in closing, even though it purportedly had the testimony about what happened in Wisconsin from the complaining witness to impeach her, turns around and argues, why would she lie?
Yeah.
Do you see my problem?
I do, Your Honor. And I would say, by the way, as an aside, Mr. Ng and I were counsel on Wenthe for all of the iterations of that case. Your Honor, Wenthe did not involve a prior false accusation. That was a straight-up application of Rule 412.
I know, but to me it seems worse that this case does involve false accusations.
Well, but there's a method for dealing with false accusations in a case like this, and that is the Goldenstein-type method, which they didn't do here. Now, even if they would have, and this is what I would suggest to you, even if they would have told Judge Guthman, look, there's this Goldenstein case, we want you to make a threshold finding that the prior false accusation is likely false, or there's a reasonable likelihood that it is false. Even if that had happened, what he would have been entitled to is what he got, which is evidence of the accusation. And he got that in spades here. He got evidence of the inconsistent statement.
But wouldn't it, the fact that TP testifies and says nothing about Wisconsin after the jury has been told by the complaining witness that she is absolutely certain she was sexually abused in Wisconsin by TP, what message does that send to the jury?
I think Judge Guthman is protecting the jury from confusion there, and that is his job. Now, I understand.
How would they be confused?
Well, why are we hearing evidence? Why are we hearing? Are we supposed to decide this Wisconsin thing?
But then my response to you is, why did the state open the door and present that evidence in the first place? You'll know then, in Wenthe, the Supreme Court was very clear. The state should not have presented this evidence. The district court should not have allowed the state to present this evidence. But we're not going to allow that to ignore the rape shield law.
Because it was evidence of a prior inconsistent statement to attack the alleged victim's credibility. And what that gave the defendant was the opportunity, again, to universally attack the credibility of that victim. Judge Guthman was right. The Wisconsin incident, they keep saying it was charged. It wasn't charged. That's ridiculous. We don't have jurisdiction in Wisconsin.
Charged. I'm just trying to figure out your impeachment argument, because the only statement, and until you put the complaining witness on the stand and had her describe what happened to her in Wisconsin, the only statement on that point was in the MCRC.
Correct.
Okay. And where she said it was PATH. So I don't understand what you're impeaching. It's like you're creating a statement for the jury at the trial for the purpose of impeaching what she said to MCRC?
She had made statements to an investigator subsequent to the MCRC video that it was TP in Wisconsin Dells.
Describe everything that was described in the testimony you elicited?
I believe so. I can't swear to that, but I believe so.
What I'm looking for is, it seems to me what your argument, I just want to make sure I understand it, is, well, you put the complaining witness on, not you, your trial counsel, had her describe in detail what the aunt allegedly did in Wisconsin in terms of the sexual abuse, because that was a form of impeachment, because you could contrast that testimony with some other statement the victim made, and it would show the inconsistency.
That's right, because they were going to do it.
Okay,
Judge Guthman was going to give them the opportunity to.
Did the complaining witness give that detailed description of what happened in Wisconsin to the MCRC nurse?
I don't recall how detailed it was, but there wasn't.
My question is then, how could the detailed testimony the state solicited function as impeachment in the form of a prior inconsistent statement unless there was a similarly detailed statement with which the jury could compare?
I believe it is similarly detailed. I mean, the MCRC nurse testified as to the interview with her, and she described both incidents, the charged incident and the Wisconsin Dells incident, in which she names appellant as the perpetrator. And then she subsequently, during investigation, names TP as the perpetrator in Wisconsin. Okay, so now we have starkly inconsistent statements with regard to that incident. So the prosecutors made the strategic decision to put both of them before the jury, and because Judge Guthman was going to let the defense
do it. The strategic decision to put the Wisconsin incident, her version of it, before the jury, why doesn't the defense have a due process right in terms of presenting a full defense to defend that detailed statement? I hear what you're saying. It's like, well, they got to defend it by saying she's not credible because she falsely accused him. They could have easily. What would have been the harm with allowing the defense to ask the sister, did you sexually abuse the complaining witness in Wisconsin? I did not. End of questioning.
I think Judge Guthman thought the harm would be that, look, that's not at issue here. We're not going to put that before the jury.
But I think you already did. How does the closing argument factor into the state's position that this was all just impeachment, that it was no substantive attempt to bolster the victim's credibility?
The prosecutors in closing argument were simply defending the credibility of the victim. And so,
by saying that she had no reason to lie when accusing her aunt.
Right. And so, therefore, she's credible with regard to the charged incident.
But wouldn't it then seem fair to allow the defense to say, tell the aunt, say, I didn't do this? So the jury could hear, you know, five words from the person who's now credibly been accused of sexual abuse, planting in the jury's mind that, nope, this didn't happen.
I've got 10 seconds. Could Judge Guthman have made that ruling? Yes, that would have been within his discretion. It was within his discretion to not allow that as well. This is not de novo review. This is abuse of discretion, and it was not an abuse of Judge Guthman's discretion to make the ruling that he made. And it wouldn't have made a difference. They got to make the same credibility arguments that they made, and they universally attacked this victim's credibility during cross-examination. I understand they're frustrated with her lack of memory, but all they had to do was show her the video, and they didn't do that. They just cross-examined her with the transcript. So, Your Honor, I would ask that the court respectfully affirm this. Judge Guthman's ruling in this case is not an abuse of discretion. Thank you for your time.
Well, 2 points. The trial testimony from the alleged victim as to Wisconsin was far more graphic than the MCRC tape. The tape was 15 minutes long. This witness was on the stand for quite a bit of time, and the testimony involved a detailed description of the penetration, the number of fingers, how painful it was, how a fingernail was broken because of TP's long fingernails, and it was far more graphic than anything they had heard before, and far more damaging, frankly. And it needed to be rebutted because it was false. It was false. So we've got this guy convicted, in our view, on false evidence, and one can say, well, it's the jury's determination of what's false and true. Yeah, but they've got to hear the evidence to make that determination. I mean, it's not enough just to cross-examine. We were both remiss in not citing Wenthe because we spent 4 years litigating that together. Sorry about that, but Wenthe is instructive in that they did open the door. I still remember vividly the trial 10 years ago, but and she did open the door as to her past sexual history and how nothing had happened, and then we were barred from discussing his discussions with her as to what her preferences were and how experienced she was. And so that was the error in Wenthe, but it was not reversible, but that was the context, which is similar here. They open the door, they walk through, they introduce the evidence, and then they jump up and down and say it's irrelevant. It's certainly not fair. We request a new trial.
Thank you for your arguments and, I guess, answering my questions. I note that the matter is submitted. You'll have our decision within 60 days.
All rise.